Edrich
100 years ago
says
in Europe, no cremation.
One bone in the body that remains on, lingers on even after the flesh disappears. And the bones disintegrate. There's one little bone that remains, and that's the bone from which the Tchiyas HaMeisim occurs. But if you're going to cremate the body, that bone will also be destroyed. So it was assumed that one who left instructions that he wants to be cremated was an apikoris who didn't believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim. And the Melech, if an apikoris dies, the relatives do not have to observe Avelos. Some people misunderstood. Some people today misunderstood this as to mean that the Avelos begins after you complete the Kvura. The Gemara says after Stimas HaGolel, after the burial is completed. So people misunderstood. They thought that if you left instructions, if the body was cremated, so there never was any Kvura. That's not the reason why. Let's say if a person is... If a person drowns in the ocean, you don't retrieve the body. You observe Avelos, even though you never did any Kvura. The reason why was because if one left instructions that he wants to be cremated, obviously he didn't believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim. Sometimes it happened that the parent did not want to be cremated, but the children wanted to get rid of the body. They cremated. So they're for sure it's not the fault of the parent. Today, it's very questionable whether one who leaves instructions that he wants to be cremated doesn't necessarily mean that he's an apikoris. He didn't believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim. Could be he didn't know anything about anything. He never knew that you're not supposed to cremate yourself. Today, a lot of people are just ignorant of the Ikori Hamuna. They don't know anything about anything. The dateline issue was... big dispute in the middle of the it was earlier as well, and in every generation there was an issue of dateline. The Talmud in Masechet Rosh Hashanah makes a statement that if the molad of the month of Tishrei occurs after 12 o'clock in the afternoon Yerushalayim time, then you cannot declare that day as Rosh Hashanah. Moled Zaken Bal Tidrash. Moled Zaken means if the Moled is after 12 o'clock in the afternoon, Yerushalayim time, you cannot declare that day as Rosh Hashanah. Why not? So on that passage in the Gemara, Rashi and Tosfos have a different interpretation. That the Gemara never, according to Rashi and Tosfos, the Gemara doesn't say a word about any dateline issue. But six or seven other Rishonim interpret, and the main one is famous, is the Rabbeinu Zrachi Halevi in his commentary, the Sefer HaMo'ar, on the bottom of the page of the Riv. So these seven Rishonim interpret that this passage in the Gemara is based on the issue of the dateline. You can only declare the Beis Din in Yerushalayim are the ones who declare Rosh Chodesh, or who declare today as Rosh Chodesh Tishrei and Rosh Hashanah. So the Rabbi Nizrahi interprets the Gemara, and the Kuzari has like that, and a group of other Rishonim, seven all told. So they interpret the Gemara that New York is 7 hours behind Yerushalayim. Los Angeles is 3 hours behind New York. The further you go to the west, so the later Shabbos begins. And when it becomes Shabbos in New York, it's already 7 hours into Shabbos in Yerushalayim. It's ready. When it becomes Shabbos in Los Angeles, it's already 10 hours into Shabbos in Yerushalayim. So if you'll declare the day as Rosh Hashanah, if the moilet occurred either Leil, the nighttime, or the morning of any given day, so there will certainly be one location in the world where all 24 hours of Rosh Hashanah will occur after the moilet. But if the moilet occurs, moilet means the appearance of the new moon, when the cycle of the moon is renewed again. So if the moilet occurs after 12 o'clock Yerushalayim time, so then these seven Rishonim interpret the Gemara as to say, then there won't even be one location in the whole wide world where all 24 hours of Rosh Hashanah will be following the moilet. Why is that so? So that's what these seven Rishonim explain, that the world is a globe. It's not a flat rectangular shape, it's a globe, and a globe has two hemispheres, and in the two hemispheres Yerushalayim is the center of one hemisphere and the other hemisphere is the other side of the globe. If Yerushalayim is the center of attraction of the one hemisphere, so that hemisphere extends from 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim to 6 hours to the west of Yerushalayim. It's all going around the whole globe. You have 24 hours. So one hemisphere will consist of 12 hour zones, 12 zones of 1 hour each. The other hemisphere will also consist of 12 zones of 1 hour each. So if you assume that if the moilet in Yerushalayim is exactly 12 o'clock noon of any given day, then you'll have all 24 hours of Shabbos, all 24 hours of Rosh Hashanah will be in some location in the world, will be following the moilet. That means that the international dateline is 18 hours to the west of Yerushalayim. In other words, 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. So that's what all of these Rishonim claim, that the international dateline cuts through Korea and it cuts through Australia. All of time began when HaKadosh Baruch Hu began the globe Vahiyerev Vahivoyke Yom Echad. So Vahiyerev means that it became Tzeis HaKachavim 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim was the center of that hemisphere. The Talmud comments that Eretz Yisrael is Gevoha Mikol HaArotzos. Eretz Yisrael is the highest location from all the other countries of the world, because one who moves to Eretz Yisrael is called an Oleh, is going on Aliyah. The one who leaves Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Loretz is called in Tanakh a Yored. When the brothers of Yosef went from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim, it says Vayerdu Achi Yosef Asor, and when they went back to Eretz Yisrael, it says Vayalu. Then the Talmud says the same is true regarding Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is the highest location in Eretz Yisrael, because v'kamta v'yalisa alamokam, v'yalisa, when you go from Yerushalayim to the rest of Eretz Yisrael, that's called the Yerida. So the Talmud doesn't mean this in a spiritual sense. This is intended as in a literal sense. So this is highly problematic. What do you mean? Eretz Yisrael is the highest elevation above sea level. The Alps in Europe are taller than Yerushalayim. It's taller than all of Eretz Yisrael. And the Talmud itself says Yerushalayim is not the highest elevation above sea level in Eretz Yisrael. The Talmud says that there's a city that's called Ein Itim on the outskirts of Yerushalayim, which has a higher elevation above sea level. So what does it mean? Eretz Yisrael Gevoya Mikol HaRotzos and Yerushalayim is Gevoya Mikol Eretz Yisrael. It's just not true. Physically, it's not true. So that's what all of these seven Rishonim interpret. When God created the world and the globe started to turn, the globe turns in one direction. So Vayere Vahivoker, what location was on top? If you want, you can hold the North Pole on top. If you want, you can hold the South Pole on top. If you want, you can hold Moscow on top. You can hold New York on top. What location was on top of the globe that you can say that that's the highest elevation? So that's what the rabbis of the Talmud had a tradition. Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, was Gevoya Mikol HaRotzos. It doesn't mean it's the highest location above sea level. That's not true. In fact, it means at the moment of creation, the first split second of creation of the world, when the globe of the earth started to turn on its axis, started to swirl, so Yerushalayim is on top of that hemisphere. You have to have one hemisphere on top, one hemisphere on the bottom, if you have a globe. So if Yerushalayim is on top, By Yerev, it became Tzeis HaKochavim, 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. That's in the middle of Korea. So that's why the Rishonim interpreted that Gemara, that the international date, the Talmud seems to be saying the international dateline is really 6 hours, 18 hours to the west of Yerushalayim, which is the same as saying 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. So the Chazon Ish wrote a long essay on this, and he writes in the beginning of his essay, attacking Rabbi Chil Michal Tkachinsky. Rabbi Tkachinsky was a very big genius. He was very sharp. He was very sharp in mathematics. He was a member of the British Royal Academy of Astronomers, I think. So the Chazon Ish didn't have such a sharp head. Chazon Ish worked very hard. He was yogeh ve'omel bater, but he wasn't such a big. He wasn't sharp like Harif is big sharp. So the Chazon Ish writes in the beginning, the first paragraph of his long essay on the dateline issue. People with a very sharp, brilliant mind have a tendency to start reading some complicated passage and pick up right away, after 5-10 lines, they already pick up the gist of what's going on, and then they don't read the rest of the passage carefully. So he says, this happened, he's describing to Rav Tkachinsky, he doesn't mention him by name. He says, a certain person is very sharp, and he read the first 10 lines in the commentary of the Sefer HaMo'or, and he'll shine oizgechapt what the Baal HaMo'or is saying. He says, if you would have, I have a shvachakop, he writes. I have a shvachakop, so I couldn't chapois. So I had to sit slowly, carefully, and read every line and every word of the Sefer HaMo'or, Rav Rabbeinu Zrach Yahalevi. So he said, if you read it slowly and carefully, that's what it says, that the dateline is not 12 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. The dateline is 6 hours to the east. According to Tkachinsky and all of the other Rabbonim, the dateline cuts through Alaska. So the tip of Alaska, the western tip of Alaska, will always be the first place where Shabbos begins. The eastern part of Alaska, probably 80%, 70% of Alaska will have the same day as New York, and 30% of Alaska, the western tip of Alaska, will be a day later. And you're splitting one landmass into 2 days. He's saying that the western part of Alaska is tomorrow, the eastern part of Alaska is today. So the Chazon Ish thought that this was also not correct. He thought that he quotes Rishonim, who say, you can't split, doesn't make sense to split one landmass into two. And he says, it's not correct what they said, that the dateline is 12 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. It was 12 hours to the east, and then Yerushalayim is not in the center. They said Yerushalayim is the center. Eretz Gavoyim Mikol Haratzis. Yerushalayim Gavoyim Mikol Eretz Yisrael. When the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, and he started the earth turning on its axis, so Yerushalayim was on top, and 6 hours to the east was the first place that it was Tzeis HaKochavim. But this was the big, so you have one quarter of the globe from Alaska to Korea. That's one quarter of the whole globe, is mutal b'machlokes, what day of the week is it? Whether all of time begins from the date line, from the line that cuts through Alaska, or from the line that cuts through Korea. Chazon Ish, based on much earlier sources, adopted the position that it doesn't make sense to split a landmass into two. That on one side of the street there should be Shabbos, the other side of the street should be Erev Shabbos. So he thought that since the bulk of Europe and Asia are on the same hemisphere as Yerushalayim, so even the southeastern tip of Asia, what do you call that? Siberia? Even Siberia, which should really be a day later, that's to whatever is to the east of Korea should really be a day later. So he said no, but since all of Europe and Asia has the same day of the week as Yerushalayim, so even the rest of Siberia, the rest of Asia, also has the same day. So one could have said because the Rove, because the majority of Europe and Asia, the big continent, has the same day of the week as Yerushalayim, so even Siberia also. So the Chazanish said, what about Australia? The dateline that cuts through Korea is going to cut through Australia as well. And two-thirds of Australia is going to be to the east of the dateline. And only one-third of Australia is going to be to the west of the dateline. So you should say that the miyut should be nigrar after the rove. So the Chazanish says he doesn't think so. That's what others say. He doesn't think so. He thinks that the west, that hemisphere that has Yerushalayim in it, is the more important of the two hemispheres, because that's where all of civilization began. That's where Beis HaMikdash was, that's where the Marishan was, somewhere in Gan Eden. That's where all of mankind began over there. That's where Noyach was, Al-Hori Ararat, somewhere in Turkey. That's where all of the history of man began over there. So that hemisphere is the more important of the two. So Chazanish Paskin, that whenever you have one landmass, part of which is in the one hemisphere, part is in the other hemisphere, so the part in the east is always nigger after the part in the west. That is the practice in Australia. The Jews who live in Australia, even in the two-thirds of the eastern part of Australia, consider it as if they're all to the west of the dateline. But none of these Rabbanim, not the Chazanish, and not all the other Rabbanim, the 15-20 Rabbanim who signed along with Rav Herzog. The reason why Rav Herzog was involved was because when the Jews were running away from the Nazis in the middle of the Second World War, so they were stuck in Japan for a while. So the Shaila was, if the dateline cuts through Korea, then Japan is the last place in the world to have Shabbos. And if you follow the Goyish dateline, the Goyish dateline is to the east of Japan. It's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, where there are no islands, and there's nothing there. So if you follow the Goyish dateline, so then Japan would be one of the first places in the world to have Shabbos. So the question is, which day should you observe Shabbos? Which day should you observe Yom Kippur, and so on? So they sent a cable to Chief Rabbi Herzog. It was at that time the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. What's the din? So Rav Herzog convened a conference of Rabbanim, and all of the Rabbanim who were at his home signed on to this telegram that they all agree with Rav Tikhachinsky, that the dateline is 12 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. And the Chazanish was the one who disagreed. He sent his own cable that he disagreed. Felt that the dateline is 6 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. It's interesting, Rav Tikhachinsky has a whole sefer on this topic. And the sefer, in the beginning of the sefer, he disagrees with Rabbi Karelitz. That's the Chazanish. He says a young person, Rabbi Karelitz, has an opinion and it's just not correct. And then, as he proceeds 10 chapters later, so then he says, Harav Agoin, Karelitz. Then 10 chapters later he says, Harav HaGoyin HaGadol, Harav Karelitz. Then 10 chapters later he says, Harav HaGoyin Harav Aaron Yishai Karelitz, Bal HaMechaba Sefer Chazanish. Every 10 chapters he was corresponding and speaking to the Chazanish. They both lived in Eretz Yisrael at that time. And as he proceeds to write his Sefer, he realizes that the man he's disagreeing with is a very great man, this Karelitz. But he still, even when he gets to the end of his book, he doesn't back down. Tikhachinsky doesn't back down from his opinion. He still sticks to his guns that it's 12 hours to the east of Yerushalayim. Now, David mentioned the other day that the Ramaz is known for his psak that on Chol HaMoed you should not put on tefillin. But for many years the practice was that people put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. There were two opinions in the Rishonim. Many people put on tefillin with a bracha. They felt that it's a vadai chi of tefillin. Others put on tefillin without a bracha. It's a sofek chi of tefillin. And then, after the Zohar became more accepted, Kabbalah became more popular, so many accepted the opinion of the Zohar that one is prohibited from wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So this was the Ramaz, Rav Moshe Zakuta, has in his tshuvas that it's not permissible to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So the Sachet Shaveh Rebbe, in later generation, the Avni Nezer, the author of the Avni Nezer, has a very fascinating tshuva, and Hilchas Tefillin, where he writes, people have an argument, why did we all of a sudden decide that he was a Chassidish Rebbe? So he says, why did the Chassidim all of a sudden decide to follow the Zohar on this issue of not wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed? After all, the Tosfos discusses it, and Tosfos says, you are obligated to wear tefillin, either you're obligated to wear tefillin bevadai with a bracha or misafik on a bracha. But why does everybody all of a sudden follow the Zohar? So he says, it's not that we're following the Zohar. The Gemara paskens like Rav Shimon bar Yochai on this issue, the Feirush. So he says, where is the Gemara? So he quotes a passage in the Gemara in Croesus. The Gemara in Croesus says, when a non-Jew accepts upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, he's elevated to the status of a Ger Toshav. Every Nochri is obligated to observe Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. All people in the world are obligated to observe Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. But if a non-Jew accepts upon himself in the presence of a bezin of three Jews, then he's going to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. See, he has the status of a Ger Toshav. Why do we call him Ger Toshav? He's not a Ger. A Ger is a non-Jew who converted and accepted upon himself to observe all 613 mitzvahs. This fellow is still a non-Jew, but he's a Toshav. We are permitted to allow him to live in Eretz Yisrael. Normally, there's a din. We're not permitted to allow non-Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael. Or another pasuk says, "Lo yisechanim, lo sitan lahem chanoya bekarka." You're not permitted to let. I don't know if the Jewish people ever had such control of Eretz Yisrael that they were ever able to observe this din. But on the books, that is the din. Eretz Yisrael, you're not permitted to allow non-Jews to live today. They can't have such a law on the books. It's impossible. If they'll try to enforce this din, there'll be a whole world war. But officially, there is such a din. So if you have a Nochri who accepted upon himself, he doesn't have to accept Geirus, even if he remains a Nochri, but he accepts upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, so we are permitted to allow him to live in Eretz Yisrael. That's why he's called the Ger Toshav. He's permitted to live in Eretz Yisrael, unlike a regular Nochri whom we're not permitted to leave, living in Eretz Yisrael. So what do you mean? If he accepts upon himself Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, but he's Mechuyev, he's obligated to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs, even if he doesn't accept it. So what does that mean to accept it? If you're obligated anyway. So the Gemara seems to assume that the Ger Toshav who accepts upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs has to observe them in a more enhanced form. He should observe not to worship Avodah Zarah with all the details. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, Eiv Menachai, Birchas Hashem, Gezel Dinim, all of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach should be observed in a more enhanced form. So the Gemara raises the possibility that maybe the Ger Toshav should be obligated to observe Shabbos. Because we have a tradition, we have a halacha, that one is Mechal Shabbos b'feheser dina ka'oved avodah zarah. If a Jew is Mechal Shabbos in a public fashion, it looks as if he's demonstrating that he doesn't believe in the story of creation. If he would believe in the story of creation as it appears in Chumash, he would observe Shabbos, Zecher l'Brias Olam, just like God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh day. So we should work 6 days and rest on the seventh day. So, since the Ger Toshav is obligated to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs Ben Enoch in a more enhanced form, with all the Abizrayhus, with all of the related aspects of each of the Sheva Mitzvahs, so the Talmud has different opinions regarding a Ger Toshav. Maybe he has to observe Shabbos. After all, that's what it sounds like it says in the Aseres HaDibros. Asaska melocha ato bincha vitecha avdecha v'amascha v'hemtecha v'gercho asher b'sharecha. Gercho asher b'sharecha is referring to a Ger Toshav. A Ger Toshav whom we are permitted to leave him living in Eretz Yisrael. Gercho asher b'sharecha doesn't refer to a ger, a convert. That's ato. When the Torah says asaska melocha ato, Ata means all the people who are past bar mitzvah. Bincha bitecha doesn't mean your children who are bar mitzvah. The children who are bar mitzvah are included in ato. Bincha bitecha means the children before bar mitzvah. The parents have to see to it that the children are not mechal Shabbos. So gercha shev sharecha doesn't refer to a ger, a convert. A convert is included in ato. So gercha shev sharecha refers, that's how the Talmud understands. Gercha shev sharecha refers to a ger toshav. So the simple reading of the Pasuk and Aseres HaDibros implies that the Ger Toshav was obligated to observe Shabbos, on the one hand. The problem is that on the other hand, we have a Pasuk that seems to indicate that a Nochri is not permitted to observe Shabbos. Shabbos is something special, unique, only for Bnei Yisrael. Beini ben Bnei Yisrael oisi li'olam. Shabbos is something special, only special relationship between Kadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. And the Zohar gives a mashal on that pasuk that the maid in the royal palace has to have the keys to all the rooms. She has to be able to go clean up in all the rooms, make the beds, and cook in the kitchen and so on, wash the dishes and everything. So the maid has the keys to the king's bedroom as well. So the maid has the right to enter. But not when the king and the queen want to have a little privacy, and the maid is going to barge in the middle, so the king is going to have her head. He's going to kill the maid if she barges in the middle. So if a Nochri is observing Shabbos, the Zohar compares that to the time that the king and the queen are together in the bedroom. They want to have some privacy, and the maid barges in. So Nochri is not permitted to observe Shabbos. And Nochri Shech. Shoshamar Shabbos is Chayav Misa B'dei Shamayim. Doesn't mean Misa B'dei Adam, Misa B'dei Shamayim. So on the one hand, we want to encourage the Ger Toshav that he should observe Shabbos to enhance his observance of one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Ben Erech, namely Avodah Zarah. Because the Machal Shabbos B'far Hesed Dina Kovet Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, the Ger Toshav is not a Yehudi, he's not Jewish. So if he'll observe Shabbos, he'll be barging in on the privacy of the Bnei Yisrael with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Beini, Bnei Yisrael, Oisi Li'olam. So the first, so the Gemara has three different opinions in the Tanaim. So one Tana says, he's obligated to observe Shabbos, but not the way we keep Shabbos. The Ger Toshav is obligated to observe Shabbos to the extent that we observe Yontif. He's allowed to do Eichel Nefesh. Whatever we're allowed to do on Yontif, he's allowed to do on Shabbos. Whatever we're not allowed to do on Yontif, the Ger Toshav is not allowed to do on Shabbos. The next Tana says, no, that's too much. The Ger Toshav is not permitted to observe Shabbos the way we observe Yontif. That'll also be a violation of this din of Beini Bnei Yisrael Oisi Li'olam. The Ger Toshav is obligated to observe Shabbos the way we observe Chol HaMoed. That's permissible. And the third opinion is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. He says that's also not permissible. If the Ger Toshav will observe Shabbos to the same extent that the Jews observe Chol HaMoed, that'll also be a violation of Beini Bnei Yisrael Oisi Li'olam. So the Ger Toshav is not permitted to observe Shabbos, period. What do you do with the Pasuk in the Aseres HaDibros? Sof kol sof it says, L'sasa kom locha b'gerch ha'she b'sharecha. So the Gemara says, no, that Pasuk means that there's an Issa d'araisa of Amira l'Nochri, if the Nochri is a Ger Toshav. If I ask a non-Jew to turn on the lights for me, or to push the elevator button for me, or to push the button to let me get into the hotel, whatever, that's Amira l'Nochri, that's only an issue of an Issa d'Rabbanan. But if you ask a Nochri who's a Ger Toshav to do a Malacha for you, That's a biblical prohibition. That's an Issa Deraisa, and that's what it means in Aseres Adibas. What do you mean, Bincha Bitecha? Are the children before Bar Mitzvah? If they're after Bar Mitzvah, they're included in Ato. So Bincha Bitecha means the children before Bar Mitzvah. Before Bar Mitzvah? So the Torah is not speaking to them. So the Torah is speaking to the parents. The parents are not permitted to allow their children before Bar Mitzvah to do Malachas on behalf of the parents. So Ger Tayshev Sherech also speaking to us. We are not permitted to ask the Ger Tayshev to do Malacha for us. And it's exactly patterned after this din in Aseres Adibas that the rabbis instituted Amira Lenochri, called the Tikkun Rabbanon, Kein Deraisa Tikkun, all the din of the Rabbanon were patterned after biblical laws. So the biblical law has it, you're not permitted to ask a Ger Tayshev to do Malacha for you. To ask a regular Nochri, that's only an Issa de Rabbanon. So the Avdei Nezer explains, what are the three opinions in the Tanaim over here? What are they arguing about? They all agree that Ger Tayshev is not permitted to observe Shabbos the way we observe Shabbos. The first opinion says the Ger Tayshev is permitted, is obligated to observe Shabbos to the extent that we observe Yontif. Second opinion is that that's not permissible either. He's only permitted to observe Shabbos the way we observe Chol HaMoed. The third opinion is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, he's not even, the Ger Tayshev is not even permitted to observe Shabbos to the extent that we observe Chol HaMoed. And the Pasuk and Aseres Adibas, L'sas Kamalacha, the Ger Hashem B'Sherecha, means that we are not permitted to ask him to do Malacha for us. But he himself is allowed to do all the Malacha he wants on Shabbos. What are they arguing about? So the Avdei Nezer explains that the pasuk that prohibits the Nochri from observing Shabbos says, "Bini b'emnei Yisrael, osi liolam." Shabbos is a private thing, and the Zohar gave the mashal, the king and the queen in the bedroom, and the maid is going to behead the queen. The king is going to behead the maid if she comes in the middle when they want some privacy. And the Torah calls this os. Shabbos is an os, a time for a special relationship, so to speak, a rendezvous between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Avdei Nezer says, apparently the Tanaim are arguing what is considered an os. Is it only Shabbos is an os? Or is even Yontif is an os? Or should we even assume that Chol HaMoed is also an os? Shabbos for sure is an os. So the first Tanaim is of the opinion only a full observance, a Shabbos dik observance of Issa Malacha, that's a nose. Yontif dik Issa Malacha, that's not a nose. So if the Ger Tayshev will observe Shabbos to the extent that we observe Yontif, there won't be any violation of the privacy of Bnei Yisrael with the Rabbanu Shalom. That's not a nose. Bnei Bnei Yisrael Oisiliyadim is only observance of Shabbos like Shabbos. If the Ger Tayshev will observe Shabbos like Yontif, that's not a violation of os. Next time it disagrees, says no, even Yontif is also an os, but Chol HaMoed is not an os. So we would encourage the Ger Tayshev to observe Shabbos as an extended form of not violating Avodah Zarah, because Machal Shabbos Befer Esya is equivalent to one who's an Ovid Avodah Zarah. So we would encourage the Ger Tayshev to observe Shabbos to the extent that we observe Chol HaMoed. Shabbos and Yontav are both an os, but Chol HaMoed is not an os. Then the third Tana, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, is of the opinion. The first two Tanaim, there are different readings, which is Rabbi Akiva, which is Rabbi Shmuel, but there are clearly three Tanaim in the Talmud. The third Tana, we know who he is. His name is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. So the third Tana is of the opinion that not only are Shabbos and Yontav an os, Chol HaMoed is also an os. So we're not permitted, we cannot encourage the Ger Tayshev to observe Shabbos to the extent of Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed is also considered an os. So he's not allowed to observe Shabbos at all. The Pasuk in Aseres Adibas means we're not allowed to ask him to do Malacha for us. Amira Lenochri, who's the Ger Tayshev, that's an Issa Deraisa. And then the Gemara concludes on these three opinions. How do we paskin regarding the Ger Tayshev? Should we encourage him to observe Shabbos like Yontif or like Chol HaMoed, not at all? So the Gemara says, Beferish, the Talmud Bavli says, Halachik Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. We paskin like the third Tana Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that a Ger Tayshev is not permitted to observe Shabbos at all, period, even to the extent of Chol HaMoed. So the Avdei Nezer says, so what is the Maskanas HaGemara? That even Chol HaMoed is also an os. So then he says, well, that's the whole story by the tefillin. It says you should wear tefillin every day of the week. Shartam lo os al yadecha. Tefillin serves as an os. Shabbos you don't put on tefillin, because Shabbos itself is an os. You don't need the other os of tefillin. So what's the story with Chalamayit? So that's the whole pilpul that the Bali HaTosfos have. Should I declare Chalamayit is also an os? A Chalamayit is not sufficient os. So the Zohar was written by Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. That's the same Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is over here in the Gemara Increases by the Ger Toshav, the same person, the same individual. Reb Shimon is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. So the Gemara says halachic Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. The Gemara endorses this psak of the Zohar, that Chalamoid is considered an os, and therefore you're not allowed to wear tefillin on Chalamoid. That's the Avnei Nezer's tshuva. He says the Hasidim follow the Zohar, not because the Zohar contradicts the Gemara and they want to follow the Zohar. No, he says this is the Gemara. Paschal's like this, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Halachic Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, that the Ger Toshav is not even permitted to observe Shabbos like we observe Chalamoid. Chalamoid is also considered an os. Once you declare that it's an os, then you don't wear tefillin. It'll be an insult to Chalamoid to wear tefillin. Chalamoid itself is an os. It doesn't need an additional os. That's the harifas of the Avnei Nezer. Yeshiva, where I teach, used to have a president for many years, Dr. Belkin. So Dr. Belkin was once speaking in Yeshiva years ago. He said, he doesn't think Reb Shimon Bar Yochai wrote the Zohar. He thinks he edited the Zohar. So just like Reb Yehuda Hanasi didn't author the Mishnayos, he edited the Mishnayos. He decided what to include, what not to include, and how to word everything. But the Mishnayos existed for generations before Reb Yehuda Hanasi. He was the editor of the Mishnayos. So Dr. Belkin claimed, I didn't pay attention to the whole presentation that he gave. He claimed that the Zohar existed for generations before Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was just the editor of the Zohar. But still, we always assume that whenever we have a passage in the Zohar, it's Stam Zohar is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. The Tanoim have a dispute regarding Gid Hanosha, a certain section of the leg of the animal, both in Behema and Chaya, that you have to cut out. You have to treber the flesh. When you shecht a Behema, you have to cut out the Gid Hanosha, make sure that Jewish people don't eat it. You have to cut out the Chalev in a Behema, make sure that you don't eat it. So the Talmud has a dispute, Machlokes HaTanoim, where the Gid Hanosha is only Osa Bachilo, or it's even Osa Bahano. So the Gemara gives all the sources, pro and con. In the Shulchan Aruch, some suggest that we should be machmir, even though the Rambam paskens Gid Hanosha is muta b'hanoah. Some suggest we should be machmir that Gid Hanosha should be asa b'hanoah, because that's what it says in the Zohar. So we should be choshish for the Zohar. So the Bach, one of the commentaries on the Torah, writes, he doesn't understand what Rav Yosef Kara wrote over here. What do you mean we should be choshish for the Zohar? The Zohar is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The Talmud quotes Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who thinks that the Gid Hanosha is also Ba'anoa. He says, we knew that all along. The Zohar doesn't add anything additional over here. The Talmud quotes Machlekes Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and the other Tanoim. Rav Shimon was outvoted. So the Zohar was outvoted on this issue. But the Gid Hanosha is also Ba'anoa. What did Rav Yosef Kara add on over here? What did he discover America by quoting that the Zohar says? The Zohar went off in the Gemara. Reb Shimon Shita is that Gid Hanosha is also Bahano, and his opinion was never accepted here. Sometimes we pass it like Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, sometimes not. You always have to follow the consensus, whatever the majority opinion was. Rabbanim on his bezdin.
Former Chief Rabbi
thought
Cook.
That all Muslims today should have the status of Ger Toshav. Of Ger Toshav. Of one who accepted upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs. Because implicit in Islam includes all of the Sheva Mitzvahs. The Talmud tells us we don't have a ger toshav bisman she'ein hayovel noheg. In order to be considered a ger toshav, you have to constitute a bezna of three Yehudim, and they have to be present when this nachri accepts upon himself the responsibility to observe the sheva mitzvahs ben noach. And this bezna can only be convened bisman she'ayovel noheg, when the laws of Yovel apply in Eretz Yisrael. Today, the laws of Yovel do not apply. In order for the laws of Yovel, for the Jubilee year, to be observed in Eretz Yisrael, the pasuk says in Chumash, "Ukrosim dror ba'aretz l'chol yoshveha." Thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants. That's the pasuk on the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. The Liberty Bell was commissioned to be manufactured by the Jewish community of Pennsylvania. It was manufactured in Europe and it was sent to America. It got broken on the way. So they wanted that pasuk. They wanted the Liberty Bell to represent the state of Pennsylvania. At that time, all the 13 states, all the 13 colonies were so excited, so they decided to adopt the Liberty Bell as representative of the whole United States of America. So that pasuk, thou should proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants, that pasuk says, in connection with Yovel, what it means is that the Eved Ivri goes free by Yovel. When it comes Yom Kippur, of the Jubilee year, every 50th year is a Jubilee year. Every 7th year you have to observe Shemitah. And 7 times 7 years is 49 years. Then the next year, the 50th year, is the Jubilee year, and it has additional dinim. The Jubilee year has the laws of Shemitah. You're not allowed to plant and plow and harvest and so on. And you also have to let free all of the Jewish slaves, Eved Ivri. So that pasuk says that the laws of Yovel only apply across and drawer ba'aretz. You should let free the Eved Ivri on Yom Kippur of Yovel, the Chol Yoshveha, only when the overwhelming majority of the world Jewish population lives in Eretz Yisrael. Now the majority of the world Jewish population does not live in Eretz Yisrael for many centuries already, from the time of the Churban Bais Rishon. The majority of the Jewish population did not live in Eretz Yisrael. That's why the laws of Yovel do not apply today. So the Talmud says that the Bezdin of three Jewish people who are supposed to accept the Ger Toshav, he's supposed to make his declaration of commitment to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs in the presence of the Bezdin of three Jews, that Bezdin can only has the right to convene if the laws of Yovel still apply. Today, for many centuries already, over 2,000 years, the laws of Yovel have not been observed, so no one has a right. We don't have a right to accept any Ger Toshav. So Rav Kook, in one of his Svarim on Shemitah, quotes one of the Rabbanim in his Bezdin, is making this suggestion that maybe all the Muslims today automatically have the status of a Ger Toshav. Maybe they don't have to accept. If you're a Muslim, it's implicit in your religion that you're going to observe all the Sheva Mitzvahs B'Nedayach. So therefore, he wants to say, for the Shnas HaShmita, the chief rabbinate in Eretz Yisrael has a practice that they sell the farms to a non-Jew, and relying on certain opinions, they assume that if the land belongs to a non-Jew, so the laws of Shmita don't have to be observed. Some of the laws of Shmita don't have to be observed. But the question is, you're not allowed to sell Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew? It's prohibited. You're not allowed to sell any Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. But to a Ger Toshav, you are permitted to sell Eretz Yisrael. So that was a suggestion of this rabbi who was close to Rav Kook. Instead of selling the kibbutzim, instead of selling the farmlands to a Christian, they should sell the farmlands to a Muslim. Because all the Muslims should have the status of a Ger Toshav. And a Ger Toshav, imcha yesha b'kirbecha, you're allowed to sell property in Eretz Yisrael to a Ger Toshav. But then Rabbi Kook gets into hot water because of this. This was a chumrah. This was a suggestion. In order not to be in violation of selling property in Eretz Yisrael to a Christian, so let's sell to a Muslim on the assumption the Muslims all have the status of Ger Toshav. But then this brings about a problem. If a Muslim has the status of a Ger Toshav, then there will be a biblical prohibition to ask him to turn on a light on Shabbos. It will be an Issa Deraisa v'Amir L'Nachri. So all the heterim that we have, we ask the non-Jew to do malacha for us every so often on Shabbos. We have a whole list of various kulas. We ask the nochri to milk the cows. And if it's in shul that you should have b'makom mitzvah derabim, that people should be able to daven, you should turn on the lights. All the kulas that we have are all based on the assumption that asking a nochri to do malacha is only an isa derabbanan. So there's a room to be lenient if it's a shas atrak, various kulas. But if you're going to tell me that the Muslims in Eretz Yisrael have the status of Ger Toshav, so Amir Lenochri asking the Muslim to do malacha for you would constitute an Issa Deraisa, then you have no heterim at all. And this Rav Kook was not prepared to be machmer, that they always had a Shabbos Goy. And so they always had Arabs who would serve as a Shabbos Goy. So how can you tansa beta chasanas at the same time? How can you say the Muslims have the status of Ger Toshav with respect to being permitted to sell them property in Eretz Yisrael, but they don't have the status of Ger Toshav with respect to asking the guy to do Malach and Shabbos? So Rabbi Cook has a difficult tshuva where he splits hairs, and he wants to suggest like that. It's a difficult tshuva. He wants to say that with respect to Hilcha Shabbos, the Muslims are not Ger Toshav. With respect to selling property in Eretz Yisrael, they are Ger Toshav. That part is already shver. It's known that the Chazon Ish used to encourage young Talmidei Chachamim to train themselves in Psak Halacha by studying the Tshuvas of Rav Kook. He liked the style of Psak of Rav Kook. Rav Kook had a traditional, classical style of Psak. Most of his Tshuvas, this happens to be one of the more difficult Tshuvas, this hair splitting over here. But usually his Tshuvas are very classical, traditional style Tshuvas. And the tradition of all of the Rabbanim in Eastern Europe. So the Chazon Ish used to encourage young Talmidei Chachamim who were studying Shulchan Aruch to train themselves in thinking out of Shaila properly by studying Rav Kook's Tshuvas. Of teaching Torah to the non-Jews. Talmud says one is not permitted to teach Torah to the Nochrim, to the non-Jews, except if he wants to study Sheva Mitzvahs, his own Sheva Mitzvahs. That's permissible to study the laws of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, Gezel, Dinim, Evim Arachai. That's okay. That he's permitted to study. But to study the laws of Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha, that's not from his Sheva Mitzvah, so that he's not allowed to study. We're not allowed to teach it to him. So in the yeshivas today, usually, in the Lithuanian yeshivas, that in recent years, it started in the 1800s, it started in the 1900s, just less than 100 years old. So the practice was that they would emphasize, from all of the Talmud Bavli, they would only emphasize the study of Noshim and Ezekiel. They would ignore Shabbos and Erevin and Chulin, many other Masechtas they would ignore. They would only Psachim they would ignore. They would only emphasize Noshim and Ezekiel. So some say jokingly that this is a carryover from Yeshiva Shem V'Yever. In the days of Avram Avinu, in the days of Yaakov Avinu, there was a Yeshiva Shem V'Yever. The Shem V'Yever were not Jewish. So what did they possibly learn in there? What did they teach in the yeshiva? So the answer is they taught Sheva Mitzvah. So that's Noshim and Ezekiel. That's all about Dinim and Gezel and Birchas Hashem. So this is a carryover from the days of the Yeshiva Shem V'Yever to emphasize the study of Noshim and Ezekiel. That's of course a joke. The real reason why they used to emphasize in the last century, in the early 1900s, they emphasized the study of Noshim and Ezekiel, is based on the Mishnah, the very last Mishnah in Bava Basra. The Mishnah says, Harotzo Shayachkim, if a person wants to sharpen his mind, Yastek Bedine Mominis, he should study Nezikin. She'en Lecha Mikzoa Batara Godel Mizeh. This is the deepest area of Halacha. So Rabbeinu Zrachia, author of the Sefer Hamor, writes in the introduction to his commentary that when the Mishnah says Rotzu Sheyachkim Yasek Bedini Maminis, one who wants to sharpen his mind should study Nezikin, it means Noshem and Nezik. These two are very good for sharpening your mind. Rabbi Nizrachia came from the city, not from Italy, he came from Lunel. Lunel is in Provence, in between France and Spain. They were always fighting which country should own Provence. So he came from the city Lunel. Lunel means the moon. So he named his sefer Amor HaKotan. The Lunel. But then when it comes to Noshim and Ezekin, he writes, you can't succeed in studying Noshim and Ezekin with the light of the moon. You have to have the light of the sun. So he changes the name of his sefer, and he calls it Hamor HaGodl. The Mor HaGodl is the sun, and the Mor HaKotan is the moon. So he wanted to name his sefer Hamor HaKotan after this name of the city where he lived, Lunel. But on Noshim and Ezekin, it's called the Mor HaGodl. And the old editions of the Talmud that were printed in Europe, so a lot of them they had mistakenly labeled the commentary of Rabbeinu Zrachi on Chulin is labeled Hamor HaGodol. Chulin, he writes in his introduction, that Chulin and Brachas are not that difficult. You can succeed with the light of the moon. He calls it the Mor HaKotan. And it's only on Noshim and Ezekin that he gave a different name to his sefer. Those sections are called the Mor HaGodol. So it's because of that comment on the Mishnah at the end of Bava Basra, the last Mishnah, the concluding Mishnah of Bava Basra, that Noshim and Ezekin are the most complicated. So that's why in yeshivas they emphasized the study of Noshim and Ezekin on the assumption that the students would study all the other Gemaras on their own. In America, Reb Mendel Zaks once made a comment. Reb Mendel Zaks was the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. He used to be the Bochein at Yeshiva University. So he said, in Radin, the shiurim were only on Noshim and Ezekin, but there was no television, and there was no secular studies, and there was no baseball, and there was no football. So the rest of the day, the boys learned on their own. So whatever Masechtas were not taught in the yeshiva, they learned on their own, and they learned the Mishnah Brura on their own. But he said in America, whatever you don't teach them, they're not going to learn. So he thought that you have to teach Chumash and Mishnah Brura and all the other Masechtas. He didn't think it was right just to emphasize Noshim and Ezekin in America and to rely on a miracle that the students are going to study everything else on their own. It's a big miracle. They don't have 24 hours a day. They're busy doing so many other things. Whatever you don't teach them, they simply won't study.